Making a profit from farming just a few acres of slopeland is a challenge, but it's one that Galway farmer Angus O'Costover thrives on in Connemara. A stonemason by trade, Angus has spent time working on farms abroad to understand how best to make his enterprise work. You run a 1 acre market garden. Can you describe your farm and your farming system to us?
It's modelled, I suppose, on a lot of American small-scale farmers, which kind of they farm anything between half an acre and an acre and a half. And they go bigger, of course. But like the one that we're doing is really modelled on those. We grow a lot of crops that have fast days to maturity. That's key, DTM. So everything that we have, we do a lot of successional sowing as well. So there's always something in the ground. So that half acre or acre that you have is very, very productive. And you're always on top of everything is the idea. And you don't allow time to go by without something working for you, as in the soil. And yeah, it's a great, it's a lovely way to farm. You have a lot of control. And yeah, that's what we're doing. We do restaurants, shops, and we have a roadside shop as well that we use to as outlets.
Great. We'll delve a bit more into the whole kind of system and how you do it and your routes to market. But you might just start with your own journey onto this particular farm and farming in general. Sure. What's your background there, Angus?
Well, I left school at 16 and my father, who was born in 1929, left school at 14. And we're very remote out here and it's an Irish language speaking community. And in my, I'll go forward maybe to my 20s really before delving in on what it was like here in Connemara as a child and as a teenager. But in my 20s, I spent 2 years living in the US. And in my early 20s, right at the beginning, and then in my late 20s, I spent another 2 years living in Australia. It was actually in Australia that I took up permaculture. I was a stonemason by trade, and I learned about permaculture. And I always wanted, and I always want to be outside and to be working that way with my body. And that's kind of where market gardening came in as an option. And we had the land at home. It's only 8 acres. But and it's only maybe 1 or 2 acres that are usable. And I always wanted to come back there. I thought I'd come back and become some kind of somebody who lives off the land only, you know, and wouldn't be somebody who was selling or doing anything like that, only living off the land. And so I thought in Australia, I would learn some more skills, maybe some more trades, be able to fix up the home here and then grow vegetables and survive like that and live like that. But I like community and I like people. So it suited then from the beginning to kind of bring people into it. And that's how we started out in 2013, I really started. So it's nearly 10 years. It'll be 10 years. This 1st of March will be the date for a 10-year celebration.
Congratulations. Yeah, excellent. Nice anniversary. And I'm sure there's been many ebbs and flows to that. Your site is quite near the sea. So a lot of people, and it has, you know, it's quite rocky and some people would consider the land quite poor. So it's quite a challenging site, yet you still managed to overcome that. Can you explain how you have done that?
Well, I actually look abroad for my ideas, maybe, or really I do those 1 acre farms in the US, in Canada, North America, even some in Europe now, since Richard Perkins has bought in a lot of that to Northern Europe. They're very inspirational. So I take a lot from them. And I've always used their techniques. Now I've started using the kind of tools that you use on small acreage as well. Our situation, physical, where we are geographically is very difficult. So it's very challenging. There's a lot of, we're very, very exposed to southwesterly winds coming in from the coast here in Galway Bay. And our farm is on a slope or nearly on a hill. And then the whole, from where we are to the sea, which takes about 20 to 30 minutes to walk, that's all opened up. There's no buildings there. There's no houses there. There's nothing there. There's no trees there. South Connemara at least doesn't have trees, you know. Mm. So it's very, very opened up, and it's difficult to farm. We've got a lot of green agricultural fencing and posts up, and we protect ourselves from the wind a lot. I use lazy beds or raised beds in my gardening so that the heavy rainfall that we get here doesn't affect me too much. So my land drains quickly in the spring, and then kind of even in December, we're still harvesting lettuce outside, depending on the December. If there's a lot of rainfall, we can't. But last year we were harvesting lettuce until the second week of December. And that's mostly, I'd put that down to kind of these raised lazy beds that, you know, that don't hold as much water. They allow the water to leave.
So your raised beds, you're not polytunnels, or you're some polytunnels, or?
We've started on polytunnels. Yeah, we've started on polytunnels. We're going to have a lot of polytunnels as we go forward. But from the beginning of this farming that we've been doing here, we haven't been taking advantages of polytunnels. Even the polytunnels, I had to save a lot of money to build the polytunnels that I've built. Mm-hmm. And I knew very quickly that homemade polytunnels wouldn't work here, you know. So it's just too open. So yeah. Homemade polytunnels weren't going to work. So we had to invest, and it took us a while to raise capital for that. But I've learned a lot over the last few years in how to farm, and we've got it really tight so that these tunnels will be, and we had a little bit of practice. We had one tunnel that we were renting over the last 3 or 4 years. So that was good practice. That was deep as well, yeah.
You did a test run. And yeah. Tell me, from what I understand, is you don't produce like hundreds of different crops. You kind of have focused it down to a number, yeah. Just a number of crops that you work with. And that's your business model on how you kind of remain productive and the business remains productive. Can you explain that to us?
Sure. I'll be kind of name dropping a little bit now, and that'll be good if there's people that are starting out, which I hope that there are amongst the viewers here tonight. Kind of one of the first people that I was learning a lot from is Curtis Stone in the United States. He's semi-retired now. He doesn't work in market gardening anymore, but he still teaches. So what I took from him was days to maturity and how quickly you can get something into the ground and out of the ground, so that you totally make your money that way, you know. So we grow a lot of fast growing salad crops, and then we grow, say, radish and turnips and maybe beetroot and a lot of colorful, small, fast growing roots that the chefs in Galway like. So Galway has a really good restaurant culture. It's well known.
It certainly does, yeah.
And we do serve some of the best restaurants in Galway. And I always wanted to do that. And I knew that this was the way to do it, by growing fast growing radishes and concentrating on a lot of those crops. The restaurants don't buy salads from us. They don't buy lettuce from us. They don't buy spinach from us. We sell those to the shops, to retail. And they are what we make most of our money from, is lettuce, spinach, kale, rocket, microgreens as well. And following Curtis Stone since 2015 or 16, I was always kind of going for microgreens and fast growing lettuces and stuff like this. So that's how we've honed in and done that and made it work on very small acreage. So, you know, it's copying somebody else, you know.
We'll talk about the routes to market in a minute, but I just think it's quite interesting. It seems to me, instead of you as the farmer bending over backwards to supply the restaurant what they want, you're actually saying to the restaurants, this is the best that I can grow in my conditions, and it will be the best food that you can get locally. Is that what you're saying? So you're kind of giving them radishes and whatever. Like, instead of them going, I want 25,000 tomatoes. Yeah. And you're like, well, that's, you know, it's not going to work quite well for me.
Well, it was hard to win them over. I've been doing this since 2013, and we started really going to restaurants in 15, 16, and they weren't really buying much from us. And then it was Richard Perkins's course down at Moyhill Farm in 2018, I think, that he got me to drop a lot of my vegetables. I was doing 40 different vegetables, you know. Mm-hmm. I was doing parsnips and broccoli and cauliflowers and all of these. They weren't working. Jerusalem artichokes and lots of other things. So also we were having problems with our restaurants because we couldn't supply it for them every week. So they couldn't really depend on us and put it on a menu, because we were learning to grow them. They didn't suit our area, our climate, and a lot of other things. They don't really suit a 1 acre garden anyway, you know. They suit 3 or 4 acres, and they suit tractor. You know, that's what they suit. They suit tractor scale and mechanized scale. You know, they don't suit the small scale. So things like parsnips and broccoli, they don't work that well. But slowly, and especially through social media and Instagram and things like this, again, a very good tool when dealing and networking with restaurants. And just all over a few short seasons, chefs come and go out of restaurants as well. So they'll go into another restaurant, and they're used to working in these high-end restaurants, so they'll go on to another version of the last restaurant they were in, and they'll give me a call, and I'll be able to do what I can do, you know. And that took a while, you know. That and still, as I say this, and it's so nice to serve the restaurants, sometimes they make you feel like you're serving them, though. But as well, our main focus is shops and supermarkets. That's really our main focus. So salads, having them all the time on the shelf, delivering 2 or 3 times a week to medium-sized supermarkets.
My dog is having a nightmare in the background. Gus, stop. Shh. Sorry, I don't know if you can hear that, me barking away. sorry. That's really interesting, because I'd say something like COVID probably helped you fine tune who your customers were a bit as well, and the kind of the dependency on other things, you know, what was maybe wasn't core to your business as well, you know. You were able to, your customer base probably became more fine-tuned with something like COVID, because obviously restaurants closed and a lot of businesses that closed. So your kind of your supermarkets and your farm shop and stuff probably, you know, built up your business as well.
Yeah, farm shop had been opened 2 or 3 years when COVID hit, and farm shop sales have been going down a little bit, mostly because we'd gone into the shops and restaurants. I should say shops and supermarkets, really. You know, as we went into these local shops, they did need to find us on the side of the road. They had us, you know, where they were going themselves. So our customers had us at hand, like that. And then, it dropped away for a year and a half, the restaurants, but that didn't hurt me much at all, really. One thing that did come from it is a lot of, like, on a small scale as well, you have to do a few different things. So one of the major things we've been doing for the last probably 3 seasons, and it really came in with COVID, is we've been selling plants and selling starts, seedlings. We started with tomatoes. By then, probably this was in 2018, 19, we'd started selling tomatoes. And by then I'd already worked out that tomato for me, with my one rented polytunnel far away, wasn't going to work as a staple crop. Like, it wasn't going to work for us. I'd learned how to make really good tomato starts and how to make really good plants and really healthy plants, using good seeds and good compost and giving them the best care. So that came in 2019 and 20, especially with COVID. We were selling a lot of transplants, and we switched from just tomatoes and kind of cucumbers and basil to growing a lot of salads, lettuce and spinach, and put them in 12-cell packs or trays and selling them. Mm-hmm. And because we didn't have to go through a middleman with that, we were selling them directly out of the roadside shop. That was profitable. That was, and it still is. So every, say, March, April, May, or April, May, June, at least, we get a big boost in sales from selling our starts and our tomatoes, and we're good at doing them, and we look after them really carefully as well. So that's a big part of how we do things now. Yeah.
So going back to your crops, you don't rotate your crops at all, you were saying, because with you're just 1 acre, you don't really have the space to rotate, or what is it?
Yeah. Well, I don't rely on a lot of brassica crops, I suppose, and nor do I rely on a lot of APA, say, of carrot crops. I do, and I don't grow as much potatoes as we used to. So we do still do a little bit of rotation. So we're very careful with kale, for example, because it's a long time in the ground, and I wouldn't take it out in March or April, and then, you know, put in radishes and kohlrabi. So I'm careful with kale. If I did do potatoes, I'd be careful with potatoes. I'd still be careful with carrots. We don't have a lot of success with carrots outside. We hope to grow them in the polytunnels over the next few seasons and do them justice. But outside, we don't have a lot of success with them. But if I was doing carrots, and I've tried it again and again over the last 3 or 4 years, I'd move them from 1 year to the next, and I'd be careful about that family as well. And I suppose they're the three main ones. Okay. I'd be careful with. I'd be kind of careful with all of those, to be honest. But at the same time, like you're telling me, we do have a really small area. So, you know, there's no point killing yourself trying to, you know, bend over backwards for crops like this. The other big thing that I would be careful about is the onion family. I don't want to get white rot into my very small garden, because I will have very little choice there. Onions become a big part of our growing system as well. But carrots, potatoes, and the brassicas, apart from the fast-growing root crops, they're not as important.
So presumably, if you're not letting it rest, maybe in the kind of stereotypical way that a lot of people would, then you're relying on your soil being super fertile. So what is your special formula?
Well, we bring in a lot of we do a lot of composting, Bridget. So we bring in a lot of composting, and it feels like you're really rejuvenating the soil so often that it doesn't feel like you're going to get so much pests and diseases, or at least so much trouble with your rotations. You know, it feels like it over the years anyway. That it's never been hasn't been a problem.
And do you use kind of just plants? Is your compost made within your own gates, or do you bring in manures or
a little bit of manure? And we bring in a few things, but in fairness, we grew everything that we grew last year was on our own compost. Other years hasn't been like that, but as we kind of improve all the time, last year now it was all our own compost, which is really nice, you know. The new tunnel, when we put it up in midsummer, we did dig up all the soil, put manure down, and then create our beds on top of that. So that was one exception. And usually we do bring in some manure and incorporate it into the compost. And the other thing that we do is we grow a lot of microgreens. So after we chop them at the stems, and the microgreens are only growing for 1 week. So that's a lot of compost. We go through maybe 3 bags of Klosspan every week to produce these microgreens. And because we're also growing the starts, and if they don't sell, sometimes they don't do that well. And even they come back to us as returns from the shops. We have all this compost coming at us, and we can put that into our field and allow it to break down. We go to one local shop. It's kind of been enough. I wouldn't mind having a second one, but we go to one local shop for their deli scraps. And we take away a couple of heavy plastic bags every week, heavy enough only one person can carry them. And we need a better system for that, because they seep out onto the floor of the van and they stink the place up.
Nice. So, and seaweed, do you bring in your kind of, just because you're quite close to the sea, do you bring up seaweed? And
used to. We don't anymore. We rely on seaweed dust from Kilkeeran. It's a Canadian owned company, used to be Irish owned, but it's good. It's seaweed dust that we get a lot of, and we get it for a good rate, and we add that on. We either add it onto the compost or we add it on directly. I prefer now to add it onto the compost, so it kind of goes everywhere. It's easier than adding it directly onto the beds.
And do you compost all your soil, or just where it's needed, or do you kind of keep an eye on what areas of your soil might need it more, or is it just kind of throughout?
I kind of, like, if something's coming out, there's often compost going on the bed, you know, in between crops. It's seldom now that I'll go and put honestly, I nearly put it in between all the time when I put a new bed, a new succession. If I pull up my spinach or something like that and I put in lettuce outside, I'll put on compost. I don't put on an awful lot, a couple of inches, like. It helps a lot with weeds, just to kind of
I was just going to say, like, do you feel you kind of have low weed issues and low pest and low disease issues if you get your balance right?
Well, I believe like you have healthy plants if you have healthy soil, you know, and if you offer enough protection to them as well, they'll be, you know, as in from the wind, they'll be healthier plants to keep them watered. There's a few little key things to do to keep your plants healthy and control your slug populations and everything else, because they really go for the plants that are not so healthy. And I'd kind of know my soil a little bit. I'd kind of know to look at it in the spring if it was going to, maybe as I was putting in the first crop, I'd know if it needed a lot or, you know, and then I'd kind of, that's where I'd kind of do a little bit of balancing, I suppose, the first crop of the year. And now we've started doing a lot of green manures as well, so that's helped as well. There's so much going on, like, you know.
I know, I can imagine. Yeah. I mean, that you've got a very productive farm on the 1 acre. You were saying you have a number of customer bases, and I know that people are probably interested in the kind of the routes to market and all that kind of, and we've already spoken, you have a farm shop, supermarkets, you have your restaurants and stuff. This can sound quite labor intensive to some people, but do you find it, how have you managed to manage that, that you're not burning out driving around like a mad yolk the whole time?
Yeah.
And or do you just find it just, it's really important to meet your customers? So what's your experience on this?
Well, we used to do, so we have the roadside shop now, but now it's kind of honesty. Since COVID came in, it's an honesty shop. So I don't meet the customers so much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I do a lot of social media, Instagram especially. So they kind of know us. We're on the side of the road and it's a very busy road and everybody around here lives along this road and they'll pass us. They see what we're doing and they trust us, I think. We're not even certified organic actually, but people know that we have to be organic and they can see it from the compost being turned in the garden, and often they used to see it with the seaweed coming in the winter of the year. There is a lot of work in it. We don't do CSA. We don't do box schemes on purpose because I find that that's too much communication. And, you know, you can't be there all the time. If someone can't make it to pick up and they ask, even for them to ask for a half an hour delay might change your course of your day totally. And it's really difficult to not understand that that's just how it works. So for us, being in the shops is much, much easier, just to be in the shops and to kind of keep those shelves stocked all the time. And we're lucky again that being on the side of the road here, we've got these shops along the road and we can kind of, we have a delivery person this year, delivery driver for the first time. And she'll get paid more than the other employees. We kind of only have one or two employees, you know, full time. Then we'd have people kind of coming in on a half rate that want to learn, or their interns or something like this. So she gets paid more than anybody else and she'll do 8 to 10 hours a week in two deliveries. And she's really, really important to us. So that helps a lot. Yeah, because we do a few different things, you're right. Like it's just, I think the restaurants are probably the trickiest to manage and to, you know, because they're super busy as well. So the chefs, I mean, and it's just very difficult sometimes to manage that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you got to grow the food first and then see if you can move it. So after a few years, after nearly 10 years of building up your customer base, you should be able to move all your vegetables on out of 1 acre. You know, it's not that difficult, but sometimes, yeah, it does take a lot of communication and effort on your end. Yeah.
And then I wouldn't be doing my job correctly if I didn't ask, do you see kind of nature responding to the way you farm, or does nature add much value to your product as well?
Yeah, it does. I mean, we're in a beautiful place. That's my number one thing, that I'm just in one of the most beautiful places in Ireland, I think. And nature is kind of the reason that I want to do this. And being outside all the time, getting my hands into the compost or all of these things, you know, they're really important. In the way that we make our compost, we probably do use, nature is integral to that and the seasons are integral to that and our green manuring and everything else and our seeding and in absolutely everything. The course of the year is the nature and the, in terms of birds and, you know, the small mammals that live and the beetles and everything else. To be honest, I'd be so busy these days that I don't see them as much as I should, you know, and trying over the last few years to set us up so that you can kind of stand back from that and see the bigger picture is another goal of mine, at least. But yeah, we, like I said, we're not a very forested area or anything like that either. So, and it's a tiny acreage. So while I've listened to a lot of the farmers over the last couple of seasons and years, listening to a lot of the people that are your ambassadors talk, it's a totally different world to where I am on and where we are on our kind of 1 acre, you know.
Listen, Angus, thank you so much. It's amazing what you've achieved on 1 acre, let's be honest, and, you know, and that you continue to achieve. And thanks so much for sharing your knowledge. It sounds like you've been through, you know, quite a thorough journey with your farm, and you're getting it to a pretty stable place as to what you know, produce, and that you're able to share that with others. So thank you so much for that generosity in doing that. Thanks for your time, Angus. And thanks to everyone for joining us. Thank you.